I don't think it's any secret, and I don't think we're being too sort of proud or vain to say that, like, this has been a good moment for Puck, and I think this week has borne that out.
Welcome to the Powers That Be Daily, Puck's podcast focused on the intersection of Wall Street, Washington, Silicon Valley, and Hollywood, and the players who run it all. I'm Peter Hamby. It's Friday, April 26th. Today, I'm joined by Dylan Byers for a chat about White House Correspondents' Dinner Week here in Washington, D.C. The parties, the outfits, the hangover brunches, and the absolutely electric small talk that defines Washington's springtime social season. Dylan and I take a moment to break down who's up and who's down in the world of D.C. media. We'll discuss all that and much, much more on today's episode of The Powers That Be. Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to The Powers That Be. I'm joined today by Dylan Byers to talk about the media, of course, but it's a big week for the media here in Washington, D.C., where we both are. Dylan and I attended a wonderful event last night with our Puck colleagues and our friends at Snapchat and WME. Matt Belli and I had a wonderful conversation with Aaron Sorkin. You'll be able to hear that on this podcast on Monday. In fact, Dylan, great to see you, buddy. How are you enjoying the White House Correspondents' Week festivities?
You know, Peter, so I loved you and Matt with Aaron Sorkin, which is just
thank you.
Phenomenal. I loved, the night before you and I were at this dinner that I host now annually, I guess, with some of the best and brightest.
That's right.
In DC media, which is always actually a truly enjoyable and thought-provoking and stimulating affair. Now we've arrived at the point in the weekend which, I mean, where to begin? This weekend is so funny because you've got like every media company and talent agency and even some of the startups like pour all of this energy into creating, you know, parties and after parties and brunches and lunches and dinners, veritable, you know, extended Oscars weekend for Washington. And then, of course, every reporter goes out there and sort of with mixed emotions sort of bemoans the gauntlet of parties that they have to attend and running into mm-hmm. everyone over and over and over again. I enjoy this weekend. I think from a reporter's perspective, it is like shooting fish in a barrel. I certainly, as you know, Peter, am someone who enjoys a good party, a good cocktail, and a good past canapé. So I'm okay with it. And I know full well after the final brunch on Sunday that I will be quite ready to fly back home to Los Angeles.
What is your favorite brunch? I feel like there's like so many competing brunches now. There's Saturday brunch. That's Tammy Haddad's brunch.
Yes.
And CNN has a brunch on Sunday, I think.
CNN has a brunch. Well, the big one, which I'm going to on Sunday, is the All Britain brunch, which back when I lived here a decade ago and I was just a lowly media reporter at Politico, I never got invited to that brunch. But now that I am a somewhat slightly more elevated media reporter at Puck, I've been extended the invitation, and I'm excited to take part. I've always heard that is sort of the brunch that the true, you know, Calorama Georgetown movers and shakers are at. So we'll see how that goes. I'll be happy to report back the following week.
Before getting into the actual substance of this podcast, which is we're going to rate who's up and who's down in the world of media, the world of DC media in particular, it feels like a good week to do that. Really quick, I was walking around town, and I know, don't at me, as John Kelly says, I know people get mad at people at Puck when we comment on the way that people in Washington dress, but I did see a guy in a seersucker suit.
Yes.
A guy who was, you know, it's not even Memorial Day. How dare you? And this man was under the age of 40 wearing a seersucker suit. I feel like you only see that in Washington and then points south. What do you think of seersucker as a look?
Well, I would commend the seersucker. I would actually say the best part of DC fashion for my money is the part that leans toward the Southern heritage.
Okay.
Right? Because there's a big, you know, there is a sort of traditional and relatively colorful aspect to the Southern heritage that I like. The thing that drives me crazy about the DC sartorial game is just an absence of any sort of flair or fit or style or sensibility whatsoever, right? It is so just about making sure you do not stand out in the corporate K Street office or at the cocktail party. And that is like, well, you know, I don't know. It's actually a pretty beautiful city, and there are actually quite a few interesting people here. Just a little touch would go a long way. A little flair, a little panache.
This feels like a topic, a three-way conversation we can have on Lauren Sherman's new podcast, Fashion People.
Yes.
We could do a whole menswear bit. Dylan, so let's get into it. I want to talk to you in the second block about who's down, but give me some thoughts about who you think is just really doing well in media these days. Who's got the buzz? Who's in the zeitgeist? Who is beloved by their employees? Who's making money? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. And this, the Correspondents' Dinner Weekend is a great time to think about that, particularly in the realm of the DC media, of course, which also includes like anyone with a presence in DC, the New York Times, CNN. It's a good time to sort of take stock of that for no other reason than that it's nominally a weekend about the media. And this is going to sound so grossly self-serving and self-referential. I would say that the fact that we are here hosting, you know, we've hosted a party with WME, and I don't think it's any secret, and I don't think we're being too sort of proud or vain to say that, like, this has been a good moment for Puck, and I think this week has borne that out. I think that Punch Bowl, which is not throwing any sort of grand party, I mean, they are sort of like the reference point now in DC for an example of a small, targeted media company that specializes in one thing, does it extremely well, and has made an impression very, very fast. And then, look, you know, I think some of the more now established players are sort of in different iterations of their life and telling different stories, right? So Politico now is very, very establishment, where it definitely was still a startup when I was here more than a decade ago. And it is trying now to sort of expand and go global and become, you know, under Axel Springer, become the sort of leading politics and policy site for, you know, capitals around the Western world. And look, with Axel's backing, I think that's going to be, you know, a compelling story. And it might not be as exciting as like Politico's early buzzy days of, you know, Maggie Haberman and J-Mart and Ben Smith and Jake Sherman, but it will be a force. And then, you know, look, I think like the Politico alumni went off and established Axios. And in this week at Puck, I've got a interview that I did with Jim Van Dye, Axios co-founder, and before that Politico co-founder. And that business too has like, it reached its exit with a $500 million sale to Cox and is now thinking about pivoting its business for the AI era in a way that actually trends back toward the Puck model, which is we can't write bullet point smart brevity aggregation anymore because that the machine is going to be able to do that. So how do we build? Do we need to go back to building our businesses up around Mike Allen, Dan Primack, Sarah Fisher, et cetera, et cetera? And whether or not they can do that and do it in a meaningful way now that they're at the scale they're at is going to be, I think, a very interesting question. And then I think that I think there are more sort of nuanced, not necessarily down, but more nuanced takes, which I'll save for the B block.
B block it is, Dylan. When we come back, Dylan's going to tell us who's not doing so hot. Welcome back to the Powers That Be, everybody. It is White House Correspondents' Dinner Week. I'm joined by Dylan Byers to talk about correspondence and the media. Dylan, you just talked about who's up in the world of DC media, Punchbowl, Axios, Politico, all good names, Puck, of course. Who's down?
Well, I don't want to. Yeah, so I don't want. I mean, one person who's down and left for dead, obviously, is the messenger.
Relatively down.
They somehow managed to not make a single White House Correspondents' Dinner weekend, which is probably for the best. I think there are some organizations that are undergoing a period of change or trying to figure out what the future looks like. I think one, you look, the last year when I was here, there was a lot of discussion around Semaphore. And at the time when Semaphore launched, it had these big ambitions to sort of become this big global news enterprise and go toe-to-toe with the New York Times and Bloomberg and the FT and others. And it has since shifted its ambitions somewhat and become a different kind of business. They have leaned really, really heavily into their events business, and they've sort of slowed on the expansion of trying to hire people, you know, in countries and capitals around the world. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, I mean, they held an event recently with a very impressive list of guests in New York, this sort of world economy summit that they do. I believe they're doing another one in the fall. And so you're starting to see, I think, that business shift from a sort of pure news journalism business with an events arm into an events business where the events sort of subsidize the journalism in order to sort of uphold the sort of integrity of the brand. So that's interesting, and whether or not they can make that work will be interesting. Obviously, the big one is the Washington Post, which, as we all know, had endured quite a backslide in the sort of post-Trump, post-2021 era, and has now spent a lot of time under its new CEO, Will Lewis, trying to determine what the path forward is. And I mentioned I talked to Jim Vandehei this week. In my conversations with him, he noted a unique challenge, I think, for the Post, which is you're looking up at the New York Times, which is, you know, leaps and bounds ahead of you and has established a multifaceted, multi-platform business that services readers with cooking recipes and consumer reports, you know, guides and games and all of that fun stuff. It's probably not advisable to try and replicate that model, right? So what could you do? You could go very deep on Washington. You are the Washington Post, and you have a legacy of really strong politics, policy, investigative coverage. Could you just go deeper in that and make yourself indispensable in that regard? But the challenge there is there's such a competitive landscape down here. How are you going to do it in a way that is different from Politico, in a way that is different from Axios? How are you going to, in a way that it actually competes with Punchbowl on the Hill in a meaningful way? Or do you need to think about acquiring Punchbowl, right? And though, you know, I know for a fact, just based off of timelines he's laid out in the past, that Will Lewis is maybe a month or so, perhaps less, away from unveiling whatever his new strategy is. And I'm very interested to see what that looks like. I'm also, by the way, interested to see, I think we're probably months, if not weeks, away from Mark Thompson at CNN unveiling, or at least providing an inkling of what his strategy is going to be. And is that one that deepens the network's historic focus on politics and policy in Washington, or does it broaden the coverage? I think it's probably the latter. But what does that mean for the CNN presence in DC? Obviously, that will always be an integral part of the business, but it will be as front and center as it is today. So there are the sort of like questions that I have. And then, of course, the New York Times, which is the sole media organization that has a policy of not sending its reporters to the dinner.
Is that still true?
Yeah, I believe it is. You know, they go to the parties. You know, I mean, it's so, that policy has always has been so ridiculous in my mind. You know, but inevitably, like, they're here and they're milling about at the parties. And of course, their own CEO, Meredith, is lives here in DC and is, you know, can be found in many of these parties as well. So it's sort of a mysterious policy, and one that I feel is sort of very outdated, given the fact that the whole nature of this business is about, you know, knowing and spending time with sources. So in any event, I think we're at a period now ahead of, as the election coverage is ramping up, now Donald Trump is in the courthouse, when I think the news media is on, like, particularly CNN and the Washington Post, are on the verge of telling us who they're going to be and what they're going to look like, which I think is long overdue. And then some of these other businesses like Semaphore still have some questions to answer.
Dylan, load up on caffeine. You got a few more parties to hit tonight, and then more on Saturday.
And never ends. All right, Peter, looking forward
Thanks,
to
buddy.
It.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of The Powers That Be. As a reminder, The Powers That Be is the official podcast of Puck. We'd like to thank Ben Landy, Liz Goff, and Alex Bigler for their editorial and production guidance. If you like what you hear, please share with a friend. It really helps us keep delivering the inside scoop that only Puck can offer. Follow us on Twitter at Puck News. I'm Ben Landy. See you tomorrow. This has been a presentation of Odyssey. Please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes wherever you get your podcasts. The Powers That Be Daily is executive produced by John Kelly, co-founder of Puck, Bob Tabador, and Ben Landy, executive editor at Puck.